The following episode of Lyrics of Their Life podcast deals with serious and sensitive issues, including drug references, violence, and detailed references to school shootings and sexual abuse. It is not suitable for children. Listener discretion is advised. Hello and welcome to Lyrics of Their Life podcast, The Story Behind, where we dive deep into the origin story behind the hits you know and love. I'm your host Adam Hampton, and in this episode, we explore the dark and haunting story behind the Boomtown Rats 1979 hit, I Don't Like Mondays. At first glance, it might seem like just another song about the universal struggle of starting a new working week, something I'm sure that we can all relate to. But the truth behind the lyrics is actually far more disturbing. I Don't Like Mondays was actually inspired by a real-life tragedy, which was the 1979 Grover Cleveland Elementary School shooting in San Diego, California. A chilling event that would mark one of the first school shootings of its kind in modern American history. So, what exactly happened on that fateful day? Why and how did the Boomtown Rats choose to write a song about this tragedy? And what kind of impact on society did I Don't Like Mondays and the shooting itself have in the years that followed? So without further ado, let's take a closer look at the story behind the song and the tragedy that shocked the world.
Prince has died at the age of 57.
This is it.
Sorry, Gary, but I was always the talented member of the band.
Keep booing, little girl. I will hit a man with glasses.
I'm really happy for you. I'm let you finish. But Beyonce had one of the best videos of all time.
Former Beatle John Lennon, who was 40, was shot and killed last night outside his luxury apartment in New York.
Has-beens shouldn't present fucking awards to Gunna Beat.
Leave Britney alone!
In the years that would lead up to the shooting, new wave pop band The Boomtown Rats and their lead singer Bob Geldof had rose from the coastal town of Doon Leary in Dublin, Ireland, where they formed initially as the band The Nightlife Thugs during 1975. They would then discover success in both Ireland and across the UK, releasing two successful albums called The Boomtown Rats and A Tonic for the Troops, which spawned the band's first UK number one single, titled Rat Trap, a song about a boy named Billy who grows depressed and tired of his hometown, which he likens to an inescapable rat trap. Known in the UK and Ireland for their often cynical approach to songwriting, and in search of a second massive UK hit, and to perhaps break into the US market, inspiration for a new hit song would fall right into the lap of Bob Geldof and keyboard player Johnny Fingers when the Grover Elementary School shooting occurred, with one line in particular being echoed around the world when the shooter claimed that she did it because she doesn't like Mondays. The 29th of January 1979 was a cold and frosty winter's morning, but it felt like just another Monday at Grover Cleveland Elementary School, which was located in Allied Gardens, San Diego, California, in the USA. As trusting parents dropped their children off at school, the principal, Bird and Rag, was just about to open the school gates to let the children inside to play in the playground before school starts. Little did they know that right across the road from them was a 16-year-old girl named Brenda Ann Spencer, who was glaring at them through her bedroom window, as she made a split-second decision at 8:30 a.m. to start loading her Ruger semi-automatic 22-caliber rifle, which she had received as a gift from her father Wallace Spencer at Christmas time just gone, along with a whopping 500 rounds of ammunition and fitted with a telescopic sight, essentially turning her into a sniper, with the rifle having little to no recoil, making it easier for accuracy. Brenda pointed the rifle out of her suburban bedroom window, and from around 150 feet away, she began firing at students and anyone who was in her line of sight, first striking and injuring a 9-year-old student named Cam Miller, just because he was wearing Brenda's favourite colour of blue. Then she moved to her front porch, where she took aim at more students as Principal Burden Ragg and teacher Daryl Barnes attempted to help the children to safety, with other teachers nearby taking students inside to lock down, as they described the sound like firecrackers going off, until they realised that people had been shot. Unfortunately, Principal Ragg would be shot and killed, despite the 53-year-old's heroics, while a 56-year-old caretaker and groundskeeper at the school, Mike Sucher, would also be shot and killed in the carnage. 8 children, aged 6 to 12, would be injured by Brenda and her rifle, as the police finally arrived at the scene and parked a garbage truck in front of the school's entrance, blocking Brenda's line of fire, but not before a 28-year-old trainee police officer, Robert Robb, was shot in the neck, nicking his jugular vein, with the bullet lodging against his spine. After firing off 36 bullets in 20 minutes, connecting with her targets 11 times, special forces and 2 SWAT teams then began creeping around the sides of the house and surrounding the building, as Brenda quickly barricaded herself inside to protect herself. While Brenda had stopped shooting, police and teachers helped usher out 300 students through the back gate and away to safety on school buses, and to their parents. For a total of 6.5 hours, Brenda and the police would be locked into negotiations, with Officer Chester First and the Third leading the charge on the bullhorn microphone, claiming that he was attempting to irritate her to pick up the phone. However, she refused to answer. When the phone inside the house rang several times, Brenda finally answered, with a member of the press from the Evening Tribune on the other end of the line, as she asked one simple question, "Why did you do it?" To which Brenda eerily replied, "I don't like Mondays. This livens up the day." While she also said, quote, "I just started shooting, that's it. I just did it for the fun of it. I just don't like Mondays. I just did it because it's a way to cheer the day up. Nobody likes Mondays." A total of 100 police officers, 30 patrol units, and 20 SWAT team members were called upon that day, using up loads of resources for the siege, as police officer Robert Robb, who was shot in the neck, hoped they would just light the house up instead of being patient with her. Brenda would then threaten to come out firing at police and that everyone that she had shot so far were easy targets. What finally got Brenda to let her guard down and surrender herself, however, was that she was promised a meal at Burger King by the police, displaying just how lost Brenda was mentally and how trivial and insane her line of thinking was. Emerging from the house was not your usual stereotypical killer, but a 16-year-old girl, with braided red hair, thin, only 5'2", and wearing glasses, a beanie, and a hooded jumper, an image that the media would latch onto to stoke further fear by characterising her as, quote, "from a horror film and evil," due to her glasses and long red hair. Brenda was placed in cuffs and taken under arrest by police, As they ventured to the local police headquarters, she was then processed and taken to a confined cell at San Diego Juvenile Hall for underage offenders. Police then entered Brenda's house to find a pigsty, with alcohol bottles scattered throughout the house. Brenda's father, Wallace, was in shock by the event and refused to take any questions from the media. However, it's believed that he wasn't present during the shooting. He would state much later in a 2005 interview with Killer Kids, stating, quote, "I was devastated. I just kind of fell apart myself. It just blew me away." The media would whip into a frenzy, covering the story extensively, as it reached worldwide news broadcasts, as the world looked on in disbelief and confusion, as they struggled to comprehend how a 16-year-old could do this, as CBS 8 San Diego covered the story in this clip.
Are there any kids hurt?
The shooting began around 8:30 a.m. A sniper was firing random shots at school children on their way to class at Cleveland Elementary. 8 children and 2 adults, the school principal and a custodian, were felled quickly. The principal and custodian would die. For a while, the sniper, 16-year-old Brenda Spencer, kept police at bay, firing from her house across the street from the school at anything that moved. A police trainee was shot while trying to assist a wounded child. Inside the school, 320 students huddled in the auditorium, and just before noon, they were evacuated in buses. Anxious parents were reunited with their children. Police had the situation in hand now. While SWAT units approached and surrounded the house, police, parents, and friends negotiated with Brenda Spencer on the phone. She was armed with a .22 caliber semi-automatic with a scope and may have taken drugs and alcohol. She at first refused to talk surrender, claiming she could hold out for a week. But towards 3 p.m., it became a question of surrender or SWAT people storming the house after a tear gas barrage. Shortly after 3, the word was out that Spencer would give it up, and then she did. SWAT officers escorted her from the house to custody, and the long and terrible San Carlos sniper siege was over. Doug McAllister, News 8, San Carlos.
The most seriously injured were taken out as soon as the gunfire let up. Surgical teams at Alvarado Hospital went to work on the first 6 victims and quickly requested that no more of the injured be sent to the already overtaxed hospital. The school's principal and custodian were among the victims brought here. Principal Burton Ragg died in surgery. Custodian Mike Sugar was dead on arrival. At Grossmont Hospital, another 4 children were brought in by police ambulance. Each had suffered gunshot wounds in the sniper attack, but hospital officials quickly pronounced their conditions as good. Concerned parents began to arrive. Not knowing yet whether their children were among the injured, they chose to wait here together rather than at home alone. And surprisingly, little more than an hour after she was brought in, 10-year-old Crystal Hardy went home with her parents. She had escaped with a minor injury and a bad fright.
I got shot, and then Mr. Barnes said, he said, Duck, you guys, run! Then I got shot, and then I went in the nurse's office, and I was bleeding a lot. I just laying there. And then the policeman came and brought me here.
You must have been really scared.
I was. It hurt.
The bullet that went through her wrist didn't harm anything. It went through, didn't hit the bone, or we're just praising the Lord.
You're lucky.
Take care, Crystal.
Carol Kendrick, News 8, La Mesa.
While Brenda waited for her day in court, journalists began to dig up all sorts of information on Brenda Spencer's upbringing and background, as people began to speculate on whether the parents were to blame, as she came from a broken family. Born April 3rd, 1962, Brenda Ann Spencer was raised initially by her mother, Dorothy Nadine Hobell, and her father, Wallace Edward Spencer, alongside her 2 older siblings, Scott and Teresa, in the Chula Vista area of San Diego, California. Dorothy was just 19 years old when she married the 25-year-old Wallace. However, she was a very smart woman who studied a business degree at university before starting her very own business. while Wallace was said to have worked as an equipment technician at the university, where they would have likely met. Dorothy would describe Brenda as a child as active, happy, well-behaved, and a good kid. However, after 18 years of marriage, according to Dorothy, Wallace was caught cheating on her multiple times, and then had the audacity to ask if he moved out for a year to sleep around, would she take him back? Disgusted by his behaviour and his comments, just days later, Dorothy made the decision to leave the relationship and seek a divorce, when Brenda was just 9 years old. Wallace would later deny that he cheated on Dorothy, while the divorce would send Brenda spiraling into a rebellious phase. After the divorce, Wallace and Dorothy battled it out in family court. However, Wallace was granted custody of Brenda and her two siblings, with Dorothy telling the documentary Killer Kids that in her opinion, she failed to gain custody as the courts didn't want to split up the three children, and that Wallace had coached the two older children to convince the courts that they wanted to go with him. Dorothy also claimed that she ran out of money to continue the fight, and that Wallace just wanted the kids to avoid paying child support. However, once again he would deny Dorothy's claims, and says he did it for the love of his kids, and to raise them his way. Brenda, with her siblings and her father, would relocate to Allied Gardens, San Diego, across the road from the Grover Elementary School. It's alleged that they lived in near poverty, with little to no furniture, barring a TV, and that they would sleep on a single mattress together on the lounge room floor, with Brenda's father believed to have turned into a heavy drinker around this time, after taking the divorce quite rough. Brenda wouldn't see too much of her mother, unfortunately, and claims that she would wander over to her house uninvited. However, she described Dorothy as absent and disinterested in maintaining a relationship with her. This is despite Dorothy believing otherwise and claiming she would spend time with her on a weekly basis. Growing up, Brenda's father Wallace would take her up into the mountains and teach her to shoot at empty beer cans, squirrels, and lizards, which became a favourite hobby of hers, among other things. With Brenda's friends claiming that she hardly ever missed her shots and that she dreamed of becoming a sniper one day in the military. Brenda also liked her pets, hiking, and during her schooling days, she took a liking to photography, where she became quite good at it, winning a competition called Humane Society. However, she was said to have struggled to pay attention in school, often falling asleep in class, while on a social level, other students found her to be, quote, crazy, a loner, obsessed with killing animals, and that they were intimidated by her presence, only being nice to her because she scared them. Interestingly enough, there is no evidence suggesting that Brenda attended Grover Cleveland Elementary School. However, she did attend Patrick Henry High School, which was only minutes down the road. After the divorce, Brenda began rebelling from as early as age 10, blaming her parents' divorce, as she tried heroin as her first drug of choice, which opened Pandora's box, leading her to take a range of drugs like PCP, marijuana, LSD, prescription pills, and drinking alcohol, with her bad behaviour leading her to be checked in to a behavioural facility or special school due to truancy, meaning she had skipped school so often without reasonable cause that the police had to step in, as she would briefly attend this special school for troubled and lost kids. While attending this special school, at a parent-teacher interview, Brenda's teachers expressed their concerns over her mental state, and one claimed that she even brought up being suicidal. However, her parents played this down, with Dorothy claiming she didn't talk to her about it and thought that maybe Wallace would say something since he was her primary carer. That conversation, however, would never take place, as Brenda carried on without any assistance. During the summer of 1978, just around 6 months out from the shooting, Brenda would be arrested for burglary and for shooting and smashing a range of windows at Grover Cleveland Elementary School, using her BB gun that she often used to shoot at birds with. While under probation during early December 1978, just a month out from the shooting, Brenda's probation officer believed that she should be admitted to a psychiatric hospital for severe depression and a psychiatric evaluation, as she was deemed a risk to herself and to others. However, her father strongly refused. All the telltale signs that Brenda was about to do something extreme were there to see, and despite all of this, her father irresponsibly watered down her mental health struggles, ignoring the glaring signs, and what would be an eerie sliding doors moment, at Christmas time, she would be given the deadly Ruger 22 caliber rifle, which she would use to carry out the horrific shooting. As Brenda later told the media, quote, "I asked for a radio and got a rifle. He bought the rifle so I would kill myself." Acquaintances, fellow students and family friends would also come forward to build a character report, telling journalists and the police that Brenda had expressed her disdain for the police in the past, labelling them as pigs, and it was alleged that she claimed she wanted to do something, quote, "big," to get on TV, and, quote, "wanted to blow a police officer away." While the world anxiously waited over a year for the sentencing, the Boomtown Rats lead singer, Bob Geldof, heard of the Brenda Spencer shooting after reading a Telex report, which is a telecommunication system allowing text-based messages to be sent and received by a teleprinter through telephone lines. As Geldof revealed in an interview, stating, quote, "I was doing a radio interview in Atlanta with Johnny Fingers, and there was a telex machine beside me. I read it as it came out. Not liking Mondays as a reason for doing somebody in is a bit strange. I was thinking about it on the way back to the hotel, and I just said, silicon chip inside her head had switched to overload. I wrote that down, and the journalists interviewing her said, tell me why. It was such a senseless act. It was the perfect senseless act. And this was the perfect senseless reason for doing it. So perhaps I wrote the perfect senseless song to illustrate it. It wasn't an attempt to exploit tragedy." Initially, Geldof and his band didn't see it as a hit song, and due to the subject matter, it was likely just going to be a B-side to one of their next singles. However, after they toured the US on their Rats tour and played the song live, the crowd surprisingly acted positively to it, so they thought they might be onto something. Despite Bob Geldof's reservations about the song, their record label Ensign also pushed them to release it. Originally, the song had a Jamaican reggae vibe to it, where they took it to an LA recording studio, adding a new wave and pop sound to it, accompanied by a grand piano, which of course became the centerpiece for the beautiful but harrowing melody, as the Boomtown Rats members perfectly capture both the anger and frustration that drove Brenda to the senseless act, while also highlighting the emotional and tragic aftermath. I Don't Like Mondays would be released officially on the 13th of July 1979, less than 6 months after the shooting, featuring as the lead single from the Boomtown Rats' third studio album, The Fine Art of Surfacing. The track would be highly criticised for its poor timing due to the event still being fresh in people's minds. However, it delivered the band their biggest hit to date, peaking at number one in 4 countries, including Australia, Ireland, South Africa, and the UK, where it spent 4 weeks in the top spot. It also made the top 10 in a further 10 countries, including New Zealand and Canada. However, it struggled in the US, making it to number 73 on the US Billboard Hottest 100, despite it receiving mass airplay around the states on the radio. That's excluding one city in particular, however, which was San Diego, who banned the song altogether from being played on the radio, due to hitting too close to home, as it remains banned to this day. The BBC and other US states briefly banned the song, however the ban has since been lifted. Brenda's parents were believed to have tried to get the song banned altogether, with many of the victims' families, survivors, and those that attended the scene that day finding the song to be insensitive, and in Officer Thurston's words, idiotic. And with everyone fearing the song would glorify what Brenda had done, Geldof claimed later on that he was contacted by Brenda from prison, stating, quote, "wrote to me saying she was glad she'd done it because I'd made her famous, which is not a good thing to live with." Despite Geldof's claims, Brenda disputes this conversation and says she has never even spoken to him in her life. For many years, Johnny Fingers and Geldof would clash over who actually wrote the song, with Geldof being credited solely right up until a court settlement was reached in 2019, adding Fingers to the songwriting credits. While the lyrics themselves are quite controversial, as they closely relate to the shooting itself and cleverly detail the tragic event, as Geldof and Fingers write, "the silicon chip inside her head gets switched to overload, and nobody's gonna go to school today, she's gonna make them stay at home." Before writing, "I don't like Mondays. Tell me why. I don't like Mondays. I want to shoot the whole day down." And the lines, "school's out early and soon we be learning, and the lesson today is how to die." The music video for the song stands at over 20 million views on YouTube, featuring a girl that closely resembles Brenda and her braided red hair. However, it doesn't display any scenes related to the shooting. The song today also stands at over 109 million streams on Spotify, the most by any Boomtown Rats song, by almost 100 million. I Don't Like Mondays would also earn the band, and in particular Bob Geldof, two Ivor Novello Awards for Best Pop Song and Outstanding British Lyric. While I Don't Like Mondays circulated around the airwaves all around the world, on the 4th of April 1980, just a day after Brenda's 17th birthday, Brenda Ann Spencer would plead guilty to two counts of murder and assault with a deadly weapon. She was tried as an adult and was sentenced to two separate 25 years to life sentences for the murders of Principal Burden Ragg and caretaker Mike Sucher. But due to being under the age of 18, she would escape the death penalty, which had recently been reinstated in the state of California during 1977. And as she pled guilty, this would forfeit Brenda's right to a trial, meaning she wouldn't be able to tell a jury her side of the story. On the terms of her sentence, Brenda would be able to be considered in the future for parole, and was let off of the charges for 9 counts of attempted murder, despite injuring the police officer and 8 children. In the courtroom, Brenda showed little to no emotions whatsoever. She was then initially sent to the California Youth Authority's Ventura School for Juvenile Offenders, spending a year here until her 18th birthday, where she would be transported to a female adult prison before spending a majority of her sentence in Chino, California's Institution for Women, where she continually requests to be released on parole after a number of unsuccessful parole requests over the years. During these parole hearings, Brenda claimed she was high on PCP, LSD, and drunk on whiskey during the shooting, after a week of boozing and drugs, and that she didn't sit there and plan the attack like most thought. As Brenda, now age 30, claimed in a 1993 jailhouse interview with CBS 8 San Diego, that there were two drug alcohol tests that told two completely different stories, and that the wrong one was used in court. As she said, quote, "If I had no drugs or alcohol in my system, then I'm just a cold-blooded killer. That's not how I am. If I have drugs or alcohol in my system at the time, it changes it from premeditated to manslaughter." While she also spoke about getting out of prison one day, stating, quote, "I'd like to have a normal life. I came in young, so I don't know what it's like out there." Brenda also claimed in the interview that she had matured now and wished to get out, study, and work with kids one day in a behavioural-type program. With Brenda also telling CBS 8 that her memory of that day is, quote, "a blur and fragmented due to her excessive use of alcohol and drugs in the week leading up to the shooting, after buying these said drugs at school." She also claimed that the media were to blame for making her out to be a plotter and planner, as she believes that this wasn't the case and that the drugs are to blame, as she was hallucinating. Brenda then became quite emotional and distressed and stated, quote, "They made it look like just for the fun of it, which is totally senseless. Every day, I live with the knowledge that I took the lives of two men, and that's real difficult." As Brenda continued to get emotional when she spoke about the impact she would have had on all the victims' and survivors' lives, both physically and psychologically, and that, quote, "I really don't want to cause any more pain. I hope they're all doing okay, that I haven't scarred them for life." Brenda appeared in the interview to be very level-headed, polite, and composed, showing little signs of insanity or what you'd think a killer would act like. One very interesting point was also made during the interview, as Brenda claimed that she doesn't recall ever saying, "I don't like Mondays," which is a belief of hers that she would continue to claim to this day, suggesting that the reporter may have been twisting the story to gain a catchy phrase or senseless reason as to why the shooting occurred, as Brenda believes that this made the public perceive her as a lunatic with no remorse.
Brenda, what you're really remembered for is you saying, "I hate Mondays." Did you say, "I hate Mondays"?
I don't remember saying that. Right now we're trying to get some evidence that I did say that. I'd like to hear the tape. And it really influenced how people saw me and thought about, you know, the whole case. It's just, I'd like to know that I actually did say that, if I did.
If you said that, it makes you sound cold-blooded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, on PCP, you're liable to say anything.
One man in particular would appear in court at many of these hearings, determined to keep Brenda behind bars for as long as possible, and that man was Cam Miller, the once 9-year-old survivor who was the first person to be shot on the day. As he told CBS 8 San Diego that it was difficult to face his would-be killer in court, but that he needed to do it, as, quote, "She's a loose cannon, and I think the whole community would be in danger if she were to be set free." According to the report, Miller claimed that his childhood, along with the other kids affected on that day, would never be the same, as they all had to testify against her on the stand, and that she, quote, "robs you of your youth and your innocence." While Miller claimed that he didn't even know that he had been struck by a bullet initially, and that it happened so fast that he didn't even hear a gunshot, as the bullet entered Miller's back, barely missing his heart, and exiting through his lower chest, as he said, quote, "Fortunately, it missed all of my organs and any internal parts. I don't have any lasting trauma from it, but I know that a lot of people do, and have not dealt with it. So I try to speak out for all the victims of the first school shooting and try to help keep her behind bars as long as possible. She doesn't deserve a second chance. Other survivors chose to distance themselves from the case as it's either too painful to relive or they chose to move on with their lives. Bert and Rag's widow, Kathy, also refused to forgive Brenda for what she had done to a loving husband and father. As Kathy spoke in a 1993 interview with CBS 8, claiming, quote, she should never be let out, and claiming in a 2005 interview that the death penalty would have been sufficient. At one hearing during 1993, Brenda even claimed that she wished the police had just killed her that day. With Brenda over the years continuing to claim that she wanted to be killed by a police officer as, quote, suicide by cop, while also claiming a suicide note was written before the shooting. However, this has never surfaced. While locked up, Brenda had even fallen in love with a fellow female prisoner and was heartbroken when she was released from jail, leaving Brenda depressed to the point of self-harm, inscribing into her skin in the Germanic language of runes, which translates to, quote, unforgiven and alone, while she also tattooed herself with a hot paperclip. Upon further medical testing during custody, it was discovered that Brenda suffered from epilepsy and depression, and even had significant damage to the temporal lobe of her brain, linking the damage back to an accident that occurred while riding her bicycle as a child, despite the possibility of being due to her father's alleged beatings. Being one of the four key compartments or lobes of the cerebral cortex, a substantial injury to the temporal lobe in particular can affect memory, language comprehension, and emotional association and regulation, which makes a lot of sense considering her cold, emotionless demeanor after the shooting, as well as her obsession with killing things and violence, and her lack of comprehension about her choices. Like, for example, shooting up a school because she doesn't like Mondays and accepting a surrender deal if she receives a Burger King meal. Brenda's mother, Dorothy, was silent for many years after the shooting, with both parents guilty of pointing the finger at one another publicly. However, Dorothy finally spoke in 2005 to the documentary Killer Kids, claiming, quote, I feel that her father should be where she is and not her. While in the same documentary, Wallace finally agreed to speak after all these years, claiming it was no one's business that he bought Brenda the rifle for Christmas and that in his opinion, he thought she was ready for one, while also claiming he had no recollection of her being suicidal at all, despite Dorothy and Brenda's statements. Brenda herself would make claims in a parole hearing during 2001 that she was sexually abused and beaten by her father and neglected by her mother. However, these claims couldn't be supported, and it raised the question as to why she hadn't brought them up in previous appeals. While each of these claims were also dismissed by her parents, and in particular by Wallace, who claimed he'd take a lie detector test to prove his innocence. These allegations by Brenda included being hit in the head and ribs by Wallace, being yelled at and called names, and sexual abuse involving inappropriate touching and intercourse after drunken nights out, while also being forced to sleep on the single mattress with him, despite Wallace claiming that she had her own bed. Brenda alleged in court that she tried to bring this matter up with him at visitations, however he never wanted to talk about it and always changed the subject. Dorothy claimed that she didn't know about the sexual abuse, but that she suspected that something might be going on while she was living with her father. When at visitations with Brenda, she acted cagey and closed off on the subject. Adding weight to Brenda's claims of sexual abuse was an investigation conducted in June 1980 into Brenda's 41-year-old father, Wallace Spencer, where he was believed to have married a 17-year-old girl named Sheila McCoy during March 1980, just a month prior to Brenda's conviction. And just when you thought it couldn't get any weirder, Sheila was actually Brenda's former cellmate back in juvenile detention or juvenile hall when she was first detained for the shooting. Upon Sheila's release, she was sent to a halfway house but struggled with life on the outside and with all the strict rules she had to follow. So with connections to Brenda, she sought refuge with her father Wallace, and from here they began their relationship, with Sheila disturbingly resembling Brenda in appearance and quickly falling pregnant. Wallace would then be investigated by the San Diego Police Department after Sheila's probation officer reported their situation, claiming statutory rape or delinquency of a minor. However, shockingly, nothing was done about it, with the judge giving Sheila the option to return to jail or marry Wallace. So, Wallace got down on one knee and Sheila agreed to marry him, tying the knot in Yuma, Arizona. After their baby daughter was born, Sheila fled the relationship, leaving Wallace to raise the baby alone. Strangely, Wallace would remain in the very same house in Allied Gardens where the shooting occurred before he died at the age of 87 during February 2016. While Wallace and Sheila's child together grew up to attend UCLA, majoring in sociology. In the aftermath of the tragic event, despite there being many shootings involving schools in the past, the Grover Cleveland Elementary School shooting would become renowned as the first of its kind to start a negative spike in school shootings across the USA, which sadly continues to this day. With Brenda claiming in court during one of her parole hearings, quote, "With every school shooting, I feel I'm partially responsible. What if they got the idea from what I did?" After the event, a plaque and flagpole would be installed at the school as a memorial to those that lost their lives that day and for those that were injured or affected. However, in the years to come, the school would struggle to stay open due to low attendance rates, before its official closure in 1983. It would later be repurposed into different private schools before it was demolished in 2018 to make way for housing. However, the flagpole and plaque were relocated and remain on the site. The Boomtown Rats went on to be renowned most for the song I Don't Like Mondays, as it featured in films and television series over the years. However, the Rats never really made it in the US, and their last top 10 hit in the UK came in 1983, leading to the band's demise and eventual breakup in 1986. Bob Geldof, on the other hand, did become a more known global figure for his humanitarian work in Africa, as he, with the Rats, performed I Don't Like Mondays at the famous 1985 Live Aid concert at Wembley, and the Live 8 concert in 2005 at Hyde Park, both of which Bob helped organise. Bob would also go on to be knighted by the Queen of England for his contributions to music and humanitarian work. And while he claims he regrets writing the song I Don't Like Mondays because it, quote, "made Brenda Spencer famous," there's no doubting he owes his greatest charting success to the tragic shooting and the writing material it provided, as both the Boomtown Rats and Geldof, as a solo artist, couldn't quite replicate that success again. Geldof wasn't exactly loved by all over the years, coming under fire for his political beliefs, tax evasion, criticism by Oasis member Noel Gallagher, who claimed that fundraising through the Live Aid concerts were a waste of time, and he even feuded with Russell Brand at the 2006 NMEs by calling Russell a cunt for calling him Sir Bobby Gandalf, only for Russell to get the last laugh by saying, quote, "It's no wonder Bob Geldof knows so much about famine. He's been dining out on I Don't Like Mondays for 30 years.
Of course, the winner is Live 8, so please welcome to the stage Sir Bobby Gandalf, everybody.
Russell Brand, what a
Bob Geldof there, obviously an amazing man to whom we have a lot to be grateful, not him calling me a of course. Really, it's no surprise that he's such an expert on famine. He has, after all, been dining out on I Don't Like Mondays for 30 years.
After 22 years, the Boomtown Rats ended their hiatus in 2008, returning to touring and releasing their latest album in 2020, as they continue to perform to this day well into their 70s, even if it's without original member Johnny Fingers, who passed away recently. Brenda Ann Spencer remains behind bars to this day in Chino, California's Institution for Women, spending most of her time repairing electrical equipment and devices as her daily job, oddly enough, just like her father once did for work. Up until his death, Wallace would visit his daughter every Saturday without fail, as they maintain their relationship despite her claims of sexual abuse at the hands of her father. This would be Brenda's one and only visitor over the years, with her mother writing to her from time to time, but nothing more. Since being in prison over the years, Brenda has gained quite a lot of weight, and she also has it quite good in there, as she has access to 3 square meals a day, free time after work, and yard time. Today, Brenda is 63 years of age and has currently served 46 years of her 50-year sentence, with 6 unsuccessful parole requests over the years due to her being deemed psychologically unfit for release and that she poses a risk to society. Her most recent denial for parole was back in February 2025, where medical reports suggested she had been diagnosed on the autism spectrum and that if she was to be released, she wouldn't like to return to San Diego, stating, quote, "Fuck San Diego. I don't want to go back there because my victims are there." Brenda Spencer's next parole hearing is scheduled for 2028, as she nears the end of her sentence. The question remains, however, will she be granted a release and allowed to re-enter society, and does she deserve it? Or will she spend the rest of her remaining days behind bars? Only time will tell. And that wraps up this episode of Lyrics of Their Life podcast, The Story Behind. Thank you all for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. If this is your first time tuning into our show, don't forget to hit the follow or subscribe button so you don't miss our future episodes. And if you're really enjoying the show, a quick rating or review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts goes a long way in helping us to grow. If you would like to follow the podcast, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, X, and TikTok at Lyrics of Their Life Podcast, or on our website at lyricsoftheirlife.com for updates and more. If you'd like to support the podcast further and help keep episodes like this coming, you can head over to my Patreon at patreon.com/lyricsoftheirlifepodcast, or you can buy me a coffee over at buymeacoffee.com/lyricsoflifepod. Every bit of support means the world to me and helps make episodes like this one possible. Whether you're a long-time listener or just discovering the show for the first time, thank you for being here and supporting the show in whatever form that comes in. Thanks again for listening. I'm your host, Adam Hampton, and this is Lyrics of Their Life.